The Supreme Court will hear oral arguments tomorrow in a case that could have major repercussions for the Affordable Care Act and millions of Americans insured through it. The plaintiffs in King v. Burwell say the law only allows states to set up health exchanges to offer tax subsidies to help people buy insurance. It doesn't allow the federal government to set up the exchanges. Of course, the federal government has in states that didn't. Emily Bazelon is a staff writer for The New York Times and a senior research fellow at Yale Law School. So, Emily, the plaintiffs say everything depends on what you think the meaning of four words are. Those words are established by the state. Explain.
The Affordable Care Act is many hundreds of pages long. In two places, these words established by the state are used about the exchanges that Obamacare set up to provide people with health insurance. And in these two places in the law, it literally says that the people who get health insurance through exchanges, quote, established by the state, are the ones who are eligible for subsidies. The law depends on these subsidies. Most people who get health insurance through the exchanges are eligible based on income to get these subsidies in the form of tax credits, and they are $3,000 apiece. So if only states with state-run exchanges can offer these subsidies, that means only 16 of the 50 states have subsidies available to the people who live in them. And that would be a huge blow to Obamacare because of all the people who'd be left out in the 34 other states.
Right. The presumption is that in the 34 states that have the federal health exchanges, if they no longer had them, the people getting those tax breaks to afford the insurance could no longer afford it. They'd drop out. That's millions of people. And so insurers would have to raise premiums on everyone else to make the system work, and the whole thing would collapse.
Exactly. And it's worth remembering what the backdrop for this is. Obamacare set up these exchanges as a partnership with the private sector. And when the law was established, Congress presumably assumed that states would set up their own exchanges. But nowhere else in the law did they say that there would be any consequences if instead the states went with option B, provided for in the law, which was to have a federally run exchange. And after the law passed, 34 states said, we don't want to do our own exchanges. In some of them, that was because of political opposition to Obamacare. And in other places, they just made a call based on their size. They wanted lower cost. They thought it would provide more flexibility to go with the federal government's exchange.
So what is the federal government arguing against the plaintiff's claim that those four words mean that only states can have exchanges?
The federal government is arguing for reading those four words in the broader context of the whole law and saying, look, Congress wouldn't have passed a law that secretly contains the seeds of its own destruction. Nobody noticed these four words for many months after the law passed, even the plaintiffs in this case, even the law's most ardent conservative critics. And so the federal government essentially says, look, this is a drafting error. This is a really long law. Okay, it has a couple of little mistakes in it, but the whole premise of the law is that subsidies are available to everyone.
Well, Gail Collins of the New York Times wrote a very, entertaining, it was meant to be an entertaining op-ed about who the plaintiffs behind this lawsuit are. There are four Virginia residents who claim they're being harmed because they're being forced to buy insurance or pay a fee. But reporters have tracked them down. Two are veterans and presumably eligible for free health care. Another didn't have a residence, could be exempt from having to buy health care. In fact, three of the four plaintiffs will soon qualify for Medicare. Most would have been forced not to do anything, not to buy anything because of their low income. We know that these four plaintiffs are backed and handpicked by the conservative groups that are financially backing this lawsuit. But does it ever come down to a plaintiff saying, I'm harmed by this, and a justice saying, actually, you're not?
The plaintiffs have to have some harm, however slight. There is a real thing called standing. And in Justice Scalia's words, what's it to you? You have to have an answer to that question in order to get into court. I just think in the end, one of these plaintiffs will turn out to have some form of impact, and that will be enough.
Well, and what's your sense of some of the things we might hear from the justices? What kind of questions might they ask?
One issue we haven't quite talked about yet is the role of the IRS in this case. The IRS is the federal agency that made a rule after taking lots of comments from all over the country about how these subsidies would work. And the IRS said that everybody across the country was eligible for the subsidies, whether or not they lived in a state with a state-run or a federally run exchange. The normal rules for courts in situations like this is to defer to the reading of a federal agency of a statute like this that's possibly ambiguous. And the reason for that is the idea that agencies have more expertise. They're in the political branch, so they're more directly responsive to the voters. And that could really be the answer to this case. Not that it's clear what the law says one way or the other, but because it's not clear, the IRS gets to say what the law meant.
Well, and I'm presuming that some of the more conservative members of the bench may not be fans of the IRS. Does that matter?
Well, it shouldn't matter. I think you're right. There is a way in which it's a little unfortunate that it's the IRS in particular that the court would have to defer to. But at least in theory, the IRS is a federal agency like any other. This law's interpretation was within the IRS's purview, and so it should be entitled to the same kind of deference another agency would get.
Well, we've described the death spiral that people say will happen if the justices side with the plaintiffs and agree that the federal government can't be involved in this on a state level. But Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell of the Burwell in King v. Burwell says the government doesn't have a contingency plan if the court rules against it. So what happens then?
You know, if the court decides to take away the subsidies, decides to side with the plaintiffs, one of the things it will surely say is, look, if Congress doesn't like this outcome, Congress can just rewrite this law. We're just talking about four little words. They can delete them. The problem, of course, is that getting Congress to fix anything about Obamacare, not to mention do many other things, has been very difficult of late. And so that will seem rather unrealistic. And I think what you're seeing from Sylvia Burwell is, first, a recognition that Congress is not easy to work with on this matter, and second, a resistance to providing a solution that the federal government doesn't think is necessary to begin with.
Don't give the justices any ideas.
Exactly.
Well, a decision on the case is expected in June. Emily Bazelon, staff writer for The New York Times, senior research fellow at Yale Law School, will be watching it along with just about everybody interested in legal issues and in the Affordable Care Act. It's going to be fascinating. Emily, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.